This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I am your host, Tim Murray. Follow me on Twitter at @1TimMurray. Joined as always in the early week segment of the podcast by Adam Burke. You can follow him at Skating Tripods. Read his updated power ratings article over at VSiN.com. Adam, we were talking about the week that was, looking ahead to this upcoming weekend. We've got some DraftKings look ahead lines, how they have adjusted, my letdown spots of the week. But as we just take a quick glance back at what we saw this past weekend, what was your biggest takeaway as we try to make sense of this early college football season?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is from a week-to-week standpoint, it's going to be very hard to nail down what a lot of these teams are. I mean, we were talking about it before we started recording here. You know, Georgia State, they barely beat Chattanooga a couple of weeks ago. Then they beat Vanderbilt, a Vanderbilt team that beat Virginia Tech earlier on in the year, a Virginia Tech team that most of us thought was going to be pretty good and may still end up being pretty good. But you know, the transitive property of college football is going to be pretty weird this season, I think. Georgia, they could not have looked better against Clemson, at least in the second half of that week one game. Clemson goes and decimates App State the following week. And then Georgia maybe should have lost to Kentucky this past week. So, you know, it's if you're not too even keel with this whole thing and you're reacting and overreacting a little bit too much, it could be a long college football season for you.
Yeah. And look, I try to find those overreaction spots and take advantage of them. But you know, you mentioned a game that we'll talk about here shortly, Tennessee, Oklahoma. Tennessee, NC State, you saw a massive movement from game of the year line to what it ultimately went off at, and Tennessee won that game 51-10. So, you know, the market's trying to figure out these teams too. We'll talk Tennessee, Oklahoma here, but, you know, for me, I guess a question for a couple teams that we think could be playoff teams, did Oregon finally wake up? Did they figure things out, outscoring Oregon State 27-0 in the second half? We know that they've got big-time playmakers. Tez Johnson had another monster game as he went for a 110. They have dudes, and the question has been, are they going to figure out on the offensive line? And now 3-0, they have a bye week. They get UCLA, Michigan State, and then they'll take on Ohio State in what we thought would be the biggest game of the year, but probably the biggest game of the year is going to take place in Austin in early November with Georgia heading to Texas. So did Oregon wake up from its slumber? And I know, collective eye roll, what the hell do we do with Notre Dame? Because the market went bananas on this Notre Dame-Purdue game, and I had a lot of questions. I thought the game was going to go under. Notre Dame went over the over almost by themselves in the first half, up 42-0. So how bad is Purdue? Is that what we can expect from Notre Dame on a week-to-week basis? And is Northern Illinois actually really good? Like that Notre Dame-Northern Illinois game, we haven't seen Northern Illinois, play yet. They'll play Buffalo this weekend. But that might go down as one of the most head-scratching results of the whole year if Notre Dame plays like they played on Saturday in West Lafayette.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think those are all fair questions. I mean, the Oregon one is one that stands out to me, and I know Jeff Schwartz, who's doing some shows with our good friend Stormy Bonantoni during the week. You know, he actually, right before I had my spot on Tuesday last week, he said he got a text about something that Oregon was doing on the offensive line to change things up, and his tune completely changed on the team. Now, of course, Jeff, an offensive lineman himself, his tune completely changed, right? So in my mind, I start thinking about it as, this is a team that allowed 5 sacks each of the last 2 seasons, had allowed 7 sacks already. I don't know what change they necessarily made, but they figured it out. And this is a team that's way too talented not to figure it out. And so when you talk about talent level, and you talk about teams that are maybe struggling a little bit, the talented teams with the good head coaches should, you know, kind of figure things out. The teams that maybe aren't as talented, maybe don't have as good of a head coach, those are the teams you kind of look at and say, man, they may be really, really inconsistent here from week to week. And, you know, I think that we'll find out more about these teams now that we're getting into conference play about who's real and who's not. but it is a difficult thing to kind of figure out here early in the season. And look, remember, I mean, we're kind of seeing this in the NFL too, with the way the preseason's been cut down, the way that guys are being utilized, stuff like that. The first 2 weeks of the NFL season are essentially preseason weeks based on what we've seen over the last few years. In college football, there's no preseason whatsoever, and most of these rosters have substantial turnover. So, yeah, it's not a big surprise to see really good teams struggling, see really bad teams kind of show up. But I think, you know, when push comes to shove over the long term, and again, having a greater margin for error in the expanded playoff now, where having two losses is just fine, and in some cases, maybe having three might be okay. You know, I think these teams just have a little bit more margin for error to them.
So we'll get to some letdown spots in a little bit. We'll also take a look at those game, those look-ahead lines and how they've adjusted. But let's jump into your article, Adam, which is up VSiN.com. You can always check it out each and every Sunday night as you're sitting back and digesting a full day of NFL. Pop on Adam's article there and read through it and see the adjustments. So let's start with the negatives here, and we'll start NC State, who has a big game against Clemson this weekend. They have not looked the part so far this year, and they are dealing with an injury. It will not be Grayson McCall getting the start this weekend. They're going to turn to the freshman moving forward. So what did you do with this NC State team? As you know, once again, Grayson McCall is going to be sidelined. I believe he is considered day-to-day is the way that they're looking at it. And the rookie, or the freshman, I should say, CJ Bailey will get the start.
Well, we're all day-to-day, Tim. That's so true. There is that. But NC State, their days of being rated too high in my power ratings are over. I gave them a 9-point drop here this week. Now, part of that is the McCall thing, right? Definitely a concern. But the majority of that is just, I had them about a 27.5-point favorite against Louisiana Tech last week. They closed 21. They win the game by 10, and they never remotely threatened not only covering the spread, but looking good in that game. So I gave them a massive adjustment. It was pretty clear that I had them way wrong coming into the season here. I like Dave Doran a lot, but I don't know. Maybe the shine is kind of coming off of him there a little
Apparently
bit.
Apparently, it's easy to win at Northern Illinois. I mean, you know, that's true. We need to go back and think back to 2012 team and be like, you know, maybe Thomas Hammock is just as good as Dave Doran.
You know what? Maybe he is. I mean, you know, Rod Carey actually won there too. That's and he was true. A guy who didn't really go anywhere and do anything else. So, yeah, you know, I dropped NC State 9 points. And, you know, this was a week where I made the decision to transition from a lot of my priors over the summer to what we're seeing here so far. And as I just mentioned, that's very difficult to do because teams have been remarkably inconsistent thus far. But it's one of those things where how much does the summer matter now when these teams have already played, most of them, 25% of their scheduled regular season games? So I made some more aggressive adjustments here with some teams this week, with NC State being the biggest.
So their line last week, so Matt Grill, by the way, comes on VSiN Primetime every Wednesday, and we do some look-ahead lines that they just released, and we'll get to Tennessee, Oklahoma, which I think is the kind of the most fascinating of the bunch. But NC State was a 12.5-point dog at DraftKings last week, and they are now a 20.5-point underdog against Clemson this week. But once again, Grayson McCall is going to be sidelined, and they're going to go with the freshman in CJ Bailey. Another quarterback change, as Michigan, who beat Arkansas State, did not cover. And I am thankful that I stayed off of that one. I thought maybe Michigan might exercise some demons and layeth the smacketh down on Arkansas State. They did not. They won 28-18, did not cover. They're 0-3 ATS to start the year. And they're going to be going away from the former walk-on Davis Warren. And Alex Orji will now take over as the starter. Big spot this week against USC. The look-ahead line was USC -2. Last week, it is now 5.5. So another adjustment there in favor of the Trojans. What did you do with Michigan? And what do you think of this spot this weekend for Michigan hosting USC?
Yeah, so I dropped Michigan 4 points. I have the line USC -6. So I'm pretty much in line with the market. And it seems like I have a good power rating on both of these teams now after adjusting USC up a couple of times and adjusting Michigan down a couple of times. So I'm pretty happy with where I have these two teams rated. Look, beating Arkansas State by 10 at home is pathetic. And not only that, I mean, an Arkansas State team that should have lost to Central Arkansas to open up the season. So, you know, and then what? Just I think they played Tulsa in week two and didn't look very good in that game either. So Arkansas State is not impressive this season. Jalen Rayner is a good player, but they are struggling at the outset here. And Michigan just did not look the part once again. To be totally honest with you, as much as I don't think Davis Warren is any good, I don't think Alex Orji is any good either. I mean, we haven't really seen the guy throw a vertical pass at any point here in his college career. I think they make it very easy for Danton Lynn, the defensive coordinator for USC, to shut down this Michigan offense. I think you have people kind of looking at Michigan and this one kind of coming back down a little bit to 5.5. I think you have people looking at this game and saying, okay, well, it's not that high of a total. It's in the mid-40s. Michigan defensively is still pretty good. You know, maybe they can slow down Miller Moss a little bit. I don't know if that'll be the case. If I was to play this game, I would lay the price with USC. But I did drop Michigan 4 points. I think I've got them pretty fairly rated at this point in time. And in fact, I got to pull this up here. I should have been better prepared for this. But the game against Ohio State now, later on in the season, like if these two teams continue on the trend line that they're on, what is that number? I already right now have Ohio State a 22-point favorite in that game at home.
It was double digits over the summer, and Michigan has gotten drastically worse. So, yeah, I think you're looking, as crazy as it sounds, 3 touchdowns, if not more. I don't think...
And I swear to God, if Ryan Day doesn't beat this version of Michigan, like, you fire him... Like I said, I think I said it on last week's
show. Into the sun.
You dot the I and fire him right there at Ohio Stadium in that game.
I was trying to pull up the game of the year lines, but Matt Grill mentioned over on Wednesday night from DraftKings. I asked him about what the game of the year line was, Michigan USC, and he chuckled and said that was his worst line of the entire offseason. That they had Michigan, I think, north of a touchdown against USC. So in the span of 3 weeks of football, we've seen basically 2 touchdowns shift between Michigan and USC. And D'Anton Lynn, if you would just want to give him the Broyles Award now for top assistant coach in the country, I think we could do that. What that defense looks like is drastically different. And, you know, for USC, man, this is a team that I think their win total was 7.5 and off to a very promising start. And look, I know that they played, Utah State after they played LSU. They're coming off of a bye. But you look at the game against Wisconsin, doesn't look very daunting anymore. They go on the road to Minnesota. Who knows what they are? I mean, remaining left, there's still some challenges, no doubt. But, you know, home to Penn State, home to Nebraska, home to Notre Dame. After this game, Adam, their biggest games are all going to be in the Coliseum. So this USC team has a path to get to the college football playoff.
Yeah, they do. I'm taking a look here at my numbers. I have them favored in every game the rest of the way. 6 against Michigan, 16 against Wisconsin, 10.5 at Minnesota, 2 at home against Penn State. I guess we'll find out if James Franklin can actually win a big game. 13-point favorite on the road at Maryland, 16 at home to Rutgers, 11 on the road at Washington, who, by the way, what a disappointing performance from the Huskies last week.
Can I just stop you real quick? And sure. I don't like to crap on college kids because playing quarterback at in a rivalry game. It's hard. And I was a crappy college athlete. You know, I never had any pressure, you know, sitting on the bench for a D3 basketball team. So I feel for Will Rogers, but you can't call timeout before fourth down because that lost them the game. Now, the play call was an absolute piece of crap, running an option to the near side sideline there on fourth down. Someone who spent 3 years on Navy's broadcast, every time they ran a near side option to the sideline, I wanted to, you know, pull my hair out. The play call was terrible, but if he doesn't call timeout there, then Washington State is pinned inside their own 3-yard line. Washington's got all 3 timeouts. Instead, they have 2 timeouts and pretty much the game is over. So a really big mistake there by Will Rogers. It was weird watching the Civil War and the Apple Cup in September. At least we got some rain in Seattle, so we got a little bit of the elements there for that rivalry. But man, Washington State, good for them. You know, these games, you know, for Oregon State, they got their ass kicked. But for Washington State, knowing that, quote, big brother left them in a pretty bad situation and they ended up winning that game in Seattle, that was no doubt a pretty, I would imagine, satisfying result there for Cougar Nation.
It was not a satisfying result for me because that was one of the biggest overlays that I had last week. And I did drop Washington 4 points. By the way, USC, 2.5 point favorite at home for me against Notre Dame right now. But again, who knows what that number looks like once we get all the way out to week 14, which definitely feels like an eternity away. Washington, a massive drop for me. Another big drop for me, Air Force, for the second straight week. Air Force looks awful. I want to put belief in Troy Calhoun to figure this thing out because that's just what Troy Calhoun does, but they do not have a quarterback to run this offense. And the thing that was really nice about Air Force, they could go vertical a little bit. They were one of the service academies that was capable of throwing the football a little bit. They can't even do that this year. 3.2 yards per carry in three games. They've scored 31 points. So Air Force was a 4 point drop for me. So Michigan, Washington, Air Force, all tied for my second biggest drop at 4 points.
Air Force, if you are a Bill Conley fan, and I think both you and I respect what Bill Conley puts out there, SP Plus had Air Force returning the least amount of production in the country, just 25% of their production from a year ago. Remember, an Air Force team that completely fell apart down the stretch last year, won their bowl game, but the last, bad memories, but that was an all-time beat if you had their win total over, as they lost, I believe, their last three games to not get over their preseason win total. Lastly, on the market down here, Liberty. The Liberty Flames, a team that I have talked about, it feels like, ad nauseum on this podcast, especially over the summer months. I just don't want them in the playoff. I really don't want this Liberty team in the playoff. New Mexico State had a chance to knock them off. What have you done with Liberty? Because you mentioned the transitive properties. Liberty should have lost to New Mexico State. New Mexico State, the last game on the board this weekend, got absolutely obliterated by Fresno State 48-0. A game on bad beats, by the way. If you had the over in that game, my condolences, because it was 48-0 with a total of 48.5, Adam, and did not get over despite the final 20 minutes of football being played there in Fresno. So what have you done with the Liberty Flames, who have quite the interesting next couple of games? They play East Carolina and then Appalachian State.
Yeah, 3 point drop for Liberty for me. They don't look the part for one reason or another. I don't know if Jamie Chadwell is kind of holding back the playbook, if they're kind of toying, you know, playing with their food a little bit. I don't know, but they really weren't impressive last week against UTEP either, a UTEP team that really doesn't look any improved under first year head coach Scotty Walden. I have them a 7 point favorite against East Carolina, so it seems like I have both of these teams rated pretty well. I have them a 2.5 point dog on the road in Boone in week 5, which, massive game there. And, you know, like you, I think a lot of people will be rooting for App State in that game. But 3 point drop for Liberty. I believe it's the second time I've dropped them here so far this season. So they're down quite a bit in my power ratings from where they were. And yet they're still favored in every game except for the App State game. And honestly, I don't know if anyone in conference, even with a down Liberty team, can beat terrible. Them.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a reason why over the summer I put together a parlay with the Chiefs to win the AFC West and Liberty to win CUSA, which was plus 115. You look at that conference, it is just, it's really bad. Now, the odds have actually shifted down to minus 170. We might find a little bit more about Western Kentucky this weekend, even though they're dealing with a backup quarterback situation there. Western Kentucky plays Toledo, who beat the brakes off of Mississippi State. Might mention that game in a situational angle here, but Liberty does host Western Kentucky this year. All right, let's get to some positives. And speaking of CUSA, could the Bearcats with a K be a team that challenges Liberty? You are moving this Sam Houston team after a very impressive victory over Hawaii. Market loves Sam Houston State. It opened pick. They got closed around 4.5, 5. And the market was right, as Sam Houston State won that game pretty easily over Timmy Chang's squad.
Yeah, the market was right. My power rating was wrong. I had Hawaii a road favorite in that game, and Sam Houston State played really, really well. Also played well against Rice in week one, picked up a nice victory there. So a 5-point bump for the Bearcats. They got blown out by UCF in week two, but I mean, you know, that's not really anything to be ashamed of. So
how about that UCF comeback? Here. Holy smokes, man. Wow.
Yeah. So another game where I had a big overlay last week was TCU. I had them like a 6-point favorite in my power ratings. Didn't play it because I looked at it and I thought, this is wrong. Like, there's something seriously wrong about what I have here for this game. Fortunately, I stayed off of it because it would have been a killer on what was already a difficult week for me. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I just, there are some teams that I struggle to rate on an annual basis. UCF is one of them. Apparently TCU might be one of them too. But yeah, Sam Houston State, 5-point upgrade for me. The other team that got a 5-point upgrade for me was Boston College. Now, if you look at the box score of that game against Missouri, it really wasn't as close as the final score would suggest. Missouri wins that game 27-21, but my line was wrong, and I've been wrong on Boston College a couple weeks in a row from a market standpoint. So I gave them a 5-point increase because they seem like a team that some influential money likes out there, and I don't really want to be going against that a whole lot at this time of the year. So I gave Boston College a 5-point bump, same thing as I did with Sam Houston State.
Boston College this week has the red bandana game. It is a primetime game against Michigan State, and Boston College right now a touchdown favorite against the Fighting Wilbos. Little inside Wilbo working for Circa over there. A lot of Michigan State folks working over at Circa. From what I understand, a very good hospitality program for the Fighting Spartans. So the more you know. All right, more adjustments for you. I know that our colleague Wes Reynolds was probably sitting in the Rose Bowl with a big old smile on his face as Indiana beat up UCLA. This one I stayed off of, thankfully, because it was one of those moves that normally, Adam, I would have taken UCLA in the home dog role. Market maybe moved too much. Thankfully, like you said about your UCF-TCU bet that you stayed off of, thankfully I stayed off of Indiana and UCLA, because I like this UCLA, or excuse me, I like this Indiana team. I don't like UCLA. I've got an over win total Indiana, under on UCLA. So I essentially did bet the game based off of my future situation. But Indiana went into the Rose Bowl and beat up UCLA, almost outgained them by 200 yards. And Curtis Rourke, very solid, 25 of 33, 307, 4 touchdowns. Indiana, man. Kirk Cignetti told us he wins. Just Google him. What did you do with Indiana?
Well, he may have the chance to win a lot, because coming up here on the schedule, they're a 30-point favorite against Charlotte, 6 against Maryland, 10 at Northwestern, 0.5-point favorite against Nebraska. Interesting game, but I have them favored in every game up until they play Ohio State in week 13, where they are a 23-point underdog. But I have them favored in every game now, and a couple of them are coin flips, 0.5-point favorite rolls, but 3.5-point adjustment for Indiana. My guess is I'm probably not done with the way that Kurt Cignetti has got this program rolling. And again, Curtis Rourke is a guy who played the position at a very high level at Ohio. Wasn't as good as his brother, but, you know, maybe kind of laying his own claim here with Nathan, you know, getting some practice squad time, some preseason time in the NFL, being a Canadian Football League legend. Maybe Curtis Rourke will follow the same career path here. But I mean, Indiana's been a rapid riser for me in my numbers, and we'll see when I get to a point where I need to stop. I mean, I have them a 30-point favorite against Charlotte. Market is 28. Not a great barometer, but seems like I've got them pretty close to the market. I guess we'll see when they take on Maryland in their second Big Ten game here next week.
Just know this. Curtis Rourke may have the best nickname in college football, the Maple Missile. God, that's so good. Much better than Ethan Kaliakmanis's Greek Gunslinger, which is still solid, but he's not as good as Curtis Rourke. All right, Tennessee.
Also, there was nothing gunslinger about that guy.
Yeah. Is it Ethan? Ethan Kaliakmanis? I don't know. Ethan, not very good at football. Kind of like Samir Naga, not going to work here anymore.
Great movie.
Tennessee. What do we do with old Rocky Top? If you had Kent State plus 70.5, sorry, didn't get to the window as The old golden flashes, nothing flashy about a 71-0 loss, down 65-0 at halftime. So this is, and I want to maybe tease, we'll talk about this on the other side of the break. What did you do at Tennessee? Because this line from last week to now is very interesting. Matt Grill at DraftKings posted a 2 for Tennessee at Oklahoma. It is now 7.5. And Adam, last week on VSiN Primetime, he said 140 of the first 141 bets at DraftKings were on Tennessee at -2, and they had to go to 3, and now they sit 7.5.
So this is the kind of game that's going to piss me off, because you're going to have people laying the, we'll call it an inflated number with Tennessee. Because if this was supposed to be 2, I mean, this is top of the market.
It was 2.
This is top of the market here for the Volunteers. I upgraded them 3 points, excuse me. I have the line Tennessee -4. But this is the kind of game that pisses me off, because you get all the people on social media taking victory laps, right? If Tennessee covers the 7 and the rec bettors lay it, they're going to be all excited. They're going to be patting themselves on the back. If Oklahoma finds a way to cover here, all the sharp guys are going to be holier than thou about it. So this is the kind of game that absolutely annoys the shit out of me. But that being said,
we need to grind my gears drop for Adam here.
Absolutely.
You know what really grinds my gears?
It's infuriating. But look, I get it, right? Tennessee's scored 800,000 points in their first 3 games, you know, and I give Kent State credit. Tennessee asked if they want a running clock in the second half, and Kent State said no. So I give the Golden Flashes a lot of credit.
They
there
had
for
to have
that.
Covered the second half, right? I mean, they only gave up 6 points. I don't know
if
if anyone out there has the second half line, please let me know, because they had to have covered that second half line.
They had to have. I gave Tennessee a 3-point bump. I mean, they've completely destroyed some pretty bad teams. I mean, again, I just dropped NC State 9 points in my power ratings. So, yeah, they blew out an NC State team that I thought was going to be okay, but maybe they're just not okay. So now Tennessee plays a real team. So now we'll find out. And I don't know. I'm curious to see what happens here, because this is going to be your, you know, pros versus Joes, sharp versus square, however you want to call it type of game. I'm not betting it, even though I have Oklahoma, you know, +4 in my numbers. So in theory, if it gets back to 7.5, I should take the Sooners. Maybe Tennessee is just that good. Yeah. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I mean, I was happy that I stayed off of NC State in week 2, because that was very tempting because of the movement from game of the year to what it ultimately was. Oklahoma has some issues, right? They should have, I wouldn't say they should have lost to Houston, but it wasn't pretty against a Houston team that I think we all know is not very good. And then they beat Tulane. They covered. It was kind of a late backdoor cover, to be honest. I didn't watch the whole thing. I didn't have a bet on the game. But Jackson Arnold seems a bit off there for Oklahoma. All that said, I've got a Nico Iamaleava Heisman bet at, I think, 16-1. He's down to +850. I like Oklahoma here. I you know, I'm not going to go out and puff my chest, because this was a hold on to your butt special, but I took 7.5 when that popped on Sunday, one of my first bets. So we'll see. I would imagine, Adam, the market probably adds that hook back on, because I'm with you. I do think the public is going to be racing to bet Tennessee, because why wouldn't you? They've been beating the shit out of everybody in the country.
Yeah, well, I mean, out of anybody. I wouldn't call anybody they've played in everybody. So that's kind of the distinction here. And again, I mean, hey, if they go out there and beat the hell out of Oklahoma, okay, I'll give you another upgrade. Like, I will think of you differently, you know? And the question then becomes, you know, not to go off on a long tangent, I know we need to take a break here, but like, maybe Georgia's not as good. Like, Alabama, I think, is good, and they played well against Wisconsin. Of course, that game was over the second Tyler Van Dyke went out. But like, then they also had all kinds of problems with South Florida. Like, is Tennessee just the least flawed team in the SEC? But then there's also a question of, hey, when Nico needs to actually play a second half, and presumably he will this week in Norman, you know, what does that look like? So a lot of questions with this Tennessee team. Certainly have to respect the gaudy numbers here so far, but now they're playing a real team, so I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, College Game Day in Norman, primetime game. Should be a lot of fun there. 191-13. That is the score of Tennessee over their opponents this year. The Mocs, the Wolfpack, and the Golden Flashes have had no chance. All right.
Remember, Kent State lost to St. Francis, Pennsylvania the week before.
Hey, man, those Red Flashes, you don't underestimate the Red Flashes. By the way, is that the first time we've ever had a Golden Flash versus a Red Flash? I'm a little upset at myself that I didn't bring that up last week on the podcast, as we've had a lot of Owl talk. How's our update on Kennesaw State versus Temple going? Kennesaw State didn't get me a cover last week, so I was a little pissed at Kennesaw State, but they have yet to win a game. They're 0-3, and Temple, I know, is winless as well. So,
speaking of, another example to bring it back to the start of the show. Like, Coastal Carolina looked so good against Jacksonville State in that week one game. And then, like, they had all kinds of problems with Temple last week. And Temple is terrible. Like, Temple is, I mean, Kent State is, I think, the worst FBS power rated team I've had at the end of week three in the time that I've been power rating teams. Temple's up there, too. I mean, Coastal Carolina, they had 287 yards. They got outgained by Temple in that game. So, yeah, just another example of, like, it's kind of hard week to week to know what you're going to get.
Coastal Carolina catching 3 on the teal turf down there against UVA, who lost last Saturday night to Maryland. By the way, Kent State catching 49 at Happy Valley this weekend, taking on Penn State. A 49-point spread.
Is that enough?
I don't know. South Point's gone to 50 now. Total. How about this? Penn State minus 49, total 56.5.
Yeah, that's pretty fantastic. I have it 48.5 for what it's worth. See, the thing is, though, like, Josh Heupel clearly gives zero Fs about running it up on people. I don't feel like James Franklin's going to do that.
James Franklin, though, we think back to the Pitt game a year ago. He likes to let people know he knows the score, knows the point spread. And, you know, Penn State coming off of a bye where they look kind of crappy against Bowling Green. Maybe you look at like a first half that they just come out and vaporize Kent State and then get ready for Illinois, which actually will be a pretty challenging game the following week as the Illini. God damn. Jim McElwain. All right. I get it. We bet these things. They don't give a shit about our bets. But Jim McElwain and Central Michigan try to get the backdoor cover. There's a minute and a half to go. They're in Illinois territory, and they ran 2 plays. It was frustrating for that result. And, you know, on Saturday, I gave out 21 at least, so that was a push. But on the podcast, I think we gave out 20 with Central Michigan, so that was painful. And then you knew that bet was dead when Illinois hit a 59-yard field goal going into the locker room at halftime. So that was always that was fun. But
by the way, sorry, I'm dying over here. I just looked at turnover margin.
It was like me eating a sandwich live on the VEASAN tailgate show, trying to emphasize sandwich spots. And when you don't have a co-host, eating food on air is a challenge because you can't really swallow it because no one else is going to be talking.
Yeah, that does make it difficult. I have no excuse, by the way, just sitting here. So I just noticed, speaking of Temple, our friends there, they have a minus 11 turnover margin already. Good? No, it's not good. 11 turnovers. They have 0 takeaways so far this season. They are one of...
They're due for regression.
They're one of 3 teams with 0 takeaways. Purdue, who's only played 2 games. And Troy, who's a mess.
Purdue sucks.
Yeah, that's
they're
fair.
Not good.
You know what? I think they really effed up hiring Ryan Walters when Jeff Brohm left. I think that was just such a bad hire.
To prepare. And look, Notre Dame would have beat a lot of teams last weekend. They were pissed, and they had a good game plan. But Purdue had 2 weeks to prepare for Notre Dame. And they didn't know what the hell was going on. I mean, one of the worst plays you'll see is Notre Dame, final play of the half. They were just trying to run out the clock. They gave it to Jadarian Price, and he went like 80 yards for a touchdown. and their safety, who plays like 25 yards deep, raced up and just completely Olay'd Price as he ran into the end zone. Purdue's not a good football team, and the market had a rude awakening there. And I think our listeners know this, but it's worth repeating, because I tweeted out the line movement. It went down to 7, and a bunch of Notre Dame fans were like, oh, Vegas, bunch of idiots. I'm like, no, no. Vegas opened this game 12. Bettors moved it to 7. So it actually was a pretty good result, I think, for the books, because there was, I think, a lot of sharp money on Purdue as that thing went off 7, 7.5. And I think Notre Dame covered. I'm not sure. I think 66 to 7, I think you cover the 7, and they did not go under.
Well, let's put it this way. I had it 16.5, and I made no adjustment to either team because of how that game played out.
I don't know. Maybe Notre Dame has a Mac problem. We'll see if they can exercise those demons. Hey, have you heard this before? Notre Dame laying 28 at home against a Mac team. Has that ever happened before, Adam?
I don't know. Has it? You would know better than I would.
Oh, yeah. 2 weeks ago. How'd that go? Oh, so I guess Miami money line has to be the play for everyone this week.
Chuck right. Martin.
Let's take a break. When we come back, run through some possible letdown spots. Take a look at those look-ahead lines, how much they've adjusted. And we'll do a little Wayne's World, too. A little look back at something I said over the summer about a situational spot. Make sure to read Adam's Power Ratings article over at vsin.com. Quick break. We're back after this.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Tim Murray, Adam Burke with you. Adam, I like to do this every week, and as I give it as a disclaimer, it's not an auto bet on all of these, obviously, and nothing in betting, even though we wish, is 100%. But I like to look at situational angles. And if there is a letdown spot, and we're going to do this on the podcast, we could talk them out and see if you do think there's a letdown angle. I am a situational handicapper. You and JBT and so many others, you know, focus more so on the numbers. And I think there's a good middle to meet here. So let's start with a Friday night game. San Jose State at Washington State. Washington State wins the Apple Cup. As we talked about, what a huge victory it was for the Cougars. This is a clear letdown spot for Washington State. That said, is San Jose State good enough from an offensive standpoint, Adam, to cover the 14? I took 14 with San Jose State. I think this is a really challenging spot for Washington State to turn around, short week. But San Jose State, the offenses that they've played, FCS Sacramento State, Air Force Kennesaw State. Those might be two of the worst offenses in the entire country. So what do you think of the situational angle Friday night on the CW, 10 p.m. Eastern?
On the CW, so you watch One Tree Hill in the lead up to this game if you're so inclined.
I don't want to wait. Oh, that's Dawson's Creek.
That's Dawson's Creek. Sorry. Come on, man.
What was One Tree Hill's song?
Oh, I have no idea. I didn't watch any of that stuff.
It's coming back, by the way. I know everyone's excited. One Tree Hill's coming back.
Do they still have reruns of the George Lopez show on the CW? It's like when you watch March Madness and you know, like you leave True TV on and it's just Impractical Jokers all the time.
By the way, San Jose State gonna be on True TV, I think, 4 times this year. Their game on Saturday was on True TV. True TV with a Mountain West doubleheader of San Jose State, Kennesaw State, leading into Fresno State, New Mexico State this past weekend.
Well, those games both did numbers, I'm sure. Look, I understand the idea of a big letdown here. I mean, for Washington State, goal line stand essentially to win that game, kind of in hostile territory. It was not a true home game for Washington, but it was in Seattle. So the guys from Pullman did have to travel a little bit. Now you get the quick turn to a San Jose State team that they played anybody? No, not really. But at the same time, Kenny Amatalolo is a pretty good head coach. And I give him a lot of credit here that, you know, he's moving away from the option because he doesn't have the right kind of roster to do it. And here so far, I mean, you can't complain about anything in their body of work, including a nice win at Air Force, where, again, I'm upset I missed the boat on that one. Not because, you know, because Air Force is so bad, but also because nobody knows the option like Ken Niumatalolo does. I think they can keep this game close. That said, this one's dancing around as we're recording here. The total's gone up to 57. Somebody took the over here in this game with some influence. And the VIG's kind of bouncing around on 13.5. It's touched 14. It's touched 15. It's come back down. It's moved around quite a bit. I haven't lined exactly where it is, pretty much at 13. But this is where the qualitative handicap comes into play of, yeah, the spot is really bad for Washington State. And San Jose State could hang around here. I mean, different culture. The program seems to be doing pretty well. You know, Brent Brennan did okay with it. But, you know, they're probably going to be much more physical and much tougher of a team, I think, under Niumatalolo. And that can be something that hurts a team in a tough spot if they've got to play a really physical opponent. It'd be San Jose State or nothing for me here in this one.
And I'd say this. I think you'll get a 14. There is a 14 if you live in Vegas at the South Point. But don't get 13.5. Wait till you get a 14. I think you'll get it. I'm mad that I missed the 14.5. There was I think Circa had it up for a little while, and then Monday morning it went to 13.5. But I do have 14 in pocket, and I like the bet. I think it's a great situational spot for San Jose State, but there's always the caveat. What do we know about San Jose State? But I'm with you. I think this is a good spot. By the way, it just went to 14 at DraftKings. So there you go. 14. Go ahead and grab it with the Spartans. That'll be a bet for me. Indiana, is this a letdown spot? You know, you look over to the sidelines and Biff Poggi's not wearing sleeves. You're at home. You just beat the crap out of UCLA. You're laying 28.5. Is Indiana prime for a letdown spot here against the fighting Biffs?
The fighting Biffs. That's fantastic. I don't know if I would call it a letdown spot per se, but I think there's a situation here where if you are Kurt Cignetti and you're up three scores, like, you're not putting Curtis Rourke into any compromising situations, right? So I don't think I'd call it a letdown. I just don't think there's a whole lot of incentive to win this game by more than four touchdowns for Indiana. So I think the effort will be there. I don't think Cignetti allows them to kind of rest on their laurels at all. Charlotte's also terrible. And not only that, without Max Brown at quarterback last week, it was really ugly. I mean, it wasn't that great with Max Brown at quarterback.
They were down 20-3 to Gardner Webb. And yeah, Gardner Webb went for a two with under 2 minutes to go to try to win the game. Good for Gardner Webb to try to pull the upset. But they had to score 24 unanswered to take the lead against Gardner Webb last week.
Yeah, Gardner Webb just collapsed. I mean, that's pretty much all there is to it. And Gardner Webb still outgained him 390 to 349. So, you know, I mean, Charlotte is, I think they're going to struggle without Max Brown. That was the whole reason to be excited about this team. So maybe an under, maybe that's the way you look at it here. And the total has moved down a little bit in this game. Maybe an under, just thinking Indiana is just going to run this clock out in the second half and not put Rourke at any risk whatsoever.
Speaking of Curtis Rourke, his former team, Ohio, they go to Lexington. Letdown spots, in my opinion, aren't always off wins. They could be off losses, too. Kentucky gave everything they had against Georgia. Stoops shouldn't have punted. I thought that was weak. But regardless, they lose 13-12. They're a 20-point favorite. If this gets to 21, I might hold my nose and take some Bobcats. You're the Mac aficionado on VSiN. How bad is Ohio this year?
I don't think they're very good. I mean, last week, they beat Morgan State 21-6. They were -3 in turnover margin in that game. Parker Navarro, 12 of 15. The three that he didn't complete went to the other team. You know, I don't think South Alabama's any good. Maybe that win gets better as the season goes along because South Alabama just scored like 90 points in their game last week. But I don't really think Ohio is all that good. But again, that being said, like, Kentucky played really tough against Georgia, especially defensively. Don't forget how bad their offense looked against South Carolina 2 weeks prior. They had 183 yards, 44 passing yards in that game against the Gamecocks. So it's pretty challenging to cover big numbers when your offense is as pathetic as Kentucky's is.
Yeah, and there's no doubt it would be deflating to come off of a near win, shocking college football's the college football world. And now you're back at home. I'm sure it won't be a great crowd. for Ohio at, you know, are they in the central time zone in Lexington? Whatever. 12:45 Eastern, 11:45 Central time. All
right. There's only so much bourbon you can drink that early in the morning.
That's true. Even though I'm imagining the amount of beer that was consumed prior to the Wisconsin-Alabama game up there in Madison was probably plentiful before 11 a.m. kick, which didn't work out all that well because Tyler Van Dyke got hurt. So I mentioned that we might go a little in the Wayback Machine.
By the way, I should mention this real quick. Athens, Ohio is only 3.5 hours from Lexington.
Bobcat Nation, let's get down there.
Bobcat Nation might show up. I mean, it's one of the best party. It's one of the best party schools in the country. And now you can go to Lexington, where there's all kinds of great bars, Bourbon Trail, all kinds of stuff like that. It could be kind of fun.
Come on, Bobcats, let's go. Make your presence known there. Maybe I'll take the 20 if you guys tell me you're going to go down there. May 30th, we had a podcast with Bill Conley, and at the end of it, I was just, you know, looking through some situational spots as you're one to do in late May, and I stumbled upon Navy hosting Memphis in week 4, which is, hey, this week. This is what I had to say about Navy and Memphis back in the summer. Week 3, their Super Bowl is at Florida State. You've got obviously the ties there with Memphis and Florida State, being that Mike Norvell came to Florida State from Memphis. And then the fact that Florida State's going to be probably a top 10 team when they play each other that week. So it's going to be a huge game. We don't have the game time yet. It probably will come out after this podcast drops, but there's a chance that's a primetime game. It's going to be a big game. And then the following week, Memphis has to go on the road to Navy. And you know it's never fun to play Navy. Last year, they played Navy on a Thursday night. They won the game, did not cover. And for someone who loves situational spots, Navy will be coming off a bye. They'll get a chance to play the best team in the conference, a team that they've had success against at least a year ago from a covering standpoint. So scheduling spot du jour, Navy, week 4 against Memphis. Navy off a bye, Memphis coming off of a road tilt against Florida State. All right, the one thing I may have had wrong here, Adam, is that I said Florida State likely a top 10 team. A little off there. By the way, anyone who had Florida State under 9.5 wins, easiest cash of your life, as that has already come home, and that was minus 110 both ways. This spot is very fascinating to me, where you've got Navy, a team that has maybe figured some things out here with their new offensive coordinator that came from, Drew Cronic? Forget what FCS program he came from, but I'll look it up when you start chatting. But this was a game that I took 11.5 with early in the week. I'd still play it in double digits. I know your power ratings have a very big discrepancy overlay here. But if you're Memphis, last year you were a 11.5 point favorite at home on a Thursday night against Navy, a bad Navy team. You won 28-24. You just went into Florida State. You got the win. I know the eyes are on the prize, right? Making it to the college football playoff. And Memphis absolutely has a great shot to do so. Lay in double digits in Annapolis, to me, that's a spot where I just have to take Navy. Navy coming off a bye. They're going to slow things down. The offense has looked a little bit better, albeit against absolute dog shit competition. I like Navy here. Anything in the double digits. What do you make of this spot?
Yeah, so I have to make the distinction here that, you know, I do have, I just put out my raw power rating number. And my raw power rating number is Memphis minus 17 here. But again, you've got to keep in mind when you play Navy, you got to cut down the possessions in that game, right? That makes it much more difficult to win by margin if there are maybe, you know, 12 possessions in the game instead of 14, 16, 8, whatever the case may be. So there's that part of it, right? Also, I think under, you know, now that we're into single digits, I like Memphis in this game. I really do.
I wouldn't play double. Worth noting, right? It's all about the number. I'm not laying, I'm not advising you to take 9.5. I think there are, did the 10s all go away? There's still 10s out there. That's the last spot I would go 10. It was 11.5 on Sunday into Monday. That's the number I grab. But at 9 at DraftKings, no thanks. I need double digits. And it may, you might get the 10.5 to show later in the week.
I think the bigger spot you worry about, and God, I hate this because Middle Tennessee is atrocious this season. Memphis playing at home against Middle Tennessee next week. If they do cover this number against Navy, they're laying a monstrous number against Middle Tennessee in the lead up to a bye, coming off of, you know, two pretty important games for them. Because keep in mind, I mean, you know, Ryan Silverfield can at least look at this thing and say, hey, look, like, we've struggled with Navy in the past. You know, we have had problems with this team before. So, yeah, I mean, it is Navy coming off of a bye. They can install a lot more of what is a very complicated offense. Also, they played Bucknell and Temple. So,
yeah, as mentioned, now that it's in dog bleep competition there so far. Drew Cronick was the head coach of Mercer. I knew he was a head coach somewhere. That is a new offensive coordinator there.
What was the year that Mercer had that big upset in the NCAA tournament?
They beat Duke in 2000. I'm not looking it up. I promise. 2015, I think. Now I
don't know. I just remember I had saved a GIF at that time of the bunch of white dudes on the team.
2014, 78-71. I think that was Paolo Banchero on that? No, that was way before him. Who was on that team? That was Jabari Parker.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So, I mean, look, Cronick said that he wanted to come in and do like a modified option spread, wing T, like all these different concepts. I think sometimes as you get deeper into the playbook, it gets more confusing and more problematic for you. And I think that maybe there's a chance that Navy is a little bit too optimistic about their offense here. So I don't know. And again, for Memphis, like, it's kind of the same thing that, you know, we talked about last week with Steve Sarkisian, where he's like, you know, hey, like, I just showed them the Notre Dame game against Northern Illinois. Like, if you're, you know, Memphis's coaching staff, you have plenty of data points already this season to point out. Now, whether or not that, you know, carries over to the field, I don't really know. But single digits, I would have to take Memphis here, if anything. But again, the spot is concerning. And also, I mean, how many possessions does Memphis get in this game to try to cover, you know, 10 points?
Last year, 11.5 point favorites. They won 28-24 on a Thursday night. So hopefully the mids, for my bet, can keep it close and make me sound smart from picking out this spot way over the summer. Toledo, I had some questions and still do about Toledo. I don't think they're the best team in the MAC this year. And I think our friend Brad Powers took their win total under. Don't quote me on that, but I believe he did. But boy, they went down to Stark Vegas. I don't know. We're going to get rid of Stark Vegas as a name if you're getting your ass kicked by Toledo by 3 scores. But that's what happened. They're playing Western Kentucky this week on the road. Western Kentucky is on their backup quarterback, Caden Velkamp. Played well last week, albeit against Middle Tennessee, who's just absolute terrible. Market's betting Toledo here. If we get to 3, and I know with a total of 63, key numbers don't necessarily mean nearly as much. I'm very intrigued by Western Kentucky in this spot, but the market is certainly on the Rockets here. Is this a letdown spot for the Rockets after going to an SEC program and winning by 3 scores?
I mean, I guess it could be. You know, and Western Kentucky, I mean, as you mentioned, Velkamp played really well. The one thing I really got right last week was laying it with Western Kentucky. Didn't get a whole lot right last week, but I got that one right at least. I mean, I think it's a tricky game, right? Because Toledo, you're going to get stretched out now. You don't have Quinyon Mitchell anymore, who was the first-round pick taken from the Rockets, the first-round pick ever in MAC history, you know, in last year's draft. So this is the kind of game where not having him kind of shows up a little bit. Also, Mississippi State, I mean, you know, they're in a transitional phase. They're bad. In a transitional phase. Jeff Lebby, now the head coach.
Florida's, you know, a six-point favorite at Mississippi State this weekend. There you go.
Yeah, that's a pretty good example. I have Western Kentucky 1.5 point favorite here in my numbers, and I have Toledo as tied for the third best team in the MAC. Miami of Ohio is power rated the highest for me. Bowling Green, 0.5 point behind them. So trip to a different kind of Bowling Green here this week for Toledo. Tough game, I think. The game all the way at the bottom of the board by rotation number. But I have Western Kentucky 1.5 point favorite. So to me, the wrong team is favored here.
Yeah, I might find myself on the Hilltoppers. I got to do a little more
digging. You might get a 3. You might be able to wait.
I think we might get it. Yeah, the way the market's going and how good they looked last week, the uncertainty with the quarterback position. I know they had the week off, I still think Northern Illinois might be in a letdown spot. Like, you beat Notre Dame. Your coach has done interviews with everybody. Jim Rome, Dan Patrick. Hell, we probably could have had him on the podcast if we want. He was going everywhere, as he should. Next week, they go to NC State. And you talk about an opportunity for Northern Illinois to play NC State coming off of a Clemson game. Then they could have in their back pocket wins over Notre Dame and NC State. They're a 14.5-point home favorite against Buffalo this week. I know they had the whole week off, but my God, it does feel like even the week off might still be too much or not enough for Northern Illinois. So I had to throw this one on the docket here.
Well, also, I mean, this is one of those situations with a team ranked. You know, you fade them in their first game. Oh, yeah, we see that always come to fruition. That's one that seems to
Syracuse
work out all the time.
This week, this year.
Also, like,
Georgia Tech.
Maybe Buffalo doesn't suck. I mean, I don't know, because they played Lafayette. They beat them by 17. They beat up UMass last week, who's terrible. In between, they lost 38-0 at Missouri, which holding Missouri to 38 is not that bad of a performance, I guess. So maybe Buffalo just doesn't completely suck. That would be one that's kind of interesting for me on the short list. I got to say, in terms of other plays I like here this week, I like Ball State getting 6.5 against Central Michigan, a team that we've already established is pretty bad at taking care of the football. Ball State didn't play in week one. They beat Missouri State in week two and then got just decimated by Miami. But I like Ball State getting 6.5 in that game. I actually make that one pick. The other one I really like, and I want to get your thoughts on this one here, Tim, and then you got to take off here in a few minutes to do a hit with Stormy. This Tulane Louisiana number is too low, right? Like, I realize that Tulane has had two enormous games back to back, one against Kansas State where they had every chance to win and couldn't. Last week, they played better than the final score would indicate against Oklahoma. I have them an 8-point favorite in this game, and the market's down to 3 here, and they have very short travel from New Orleans to Lafayette, like stupid short travel. Like, I think this is a massive overreaction to Tulane losing two games that, frankly, they were supposed to lose.
I think from a situational angle, Louisiana has a massive advantage, and I actually talked about this over the summer, which was they've played two, to quote Brad Powers, tomato cans, Grambling and Kennesaw State, bye week, and Tulane has gone home to Kansas State, at Oklahoma, and now you got to go to Louisiana. So I think from a situational angle, that's the tricky part. I have to stay off this game just because I think from a standpoint of body rest, what you just played, how much energy you exerted for those two games, that's I have to stay off it. And I understand why the market's coming a little bit in on Louisiana here.
Yeah, I like Tulane. It's one of my biggest overlays of the week. I'm going to play it. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But I think John Sumrall is a good head coach. And I think Tulane is just vastly better and more talented.
They're much better than I thought. And, you know, they're a good football program. So we'll see when they play, you know, Memphis later on this year. Before we let you run, I just want to run through these real quick and get your quick thoughts. So these were the look ahead lines at DraftKings and what the market is now. Nebraska was -8 against Illinois. That's now to 10 at DraftKings. These are DraftKings numbers. Utah was -1.5. That is now 2.5, as Utah should have Cam Rising back for this week as they host or visit Oklahoma State. Tennessee, we've talked about this. They were a 2-point favorite. They're now a 7-point favorite at Oklahoma. NC State, injury concerns with the quarterback CJ Bailey getting the start for Grayson McCall. 12.5-point dog out to 20.5 at Clemson. Arkansas, no movement in the market from the look ahead number. They are a 3.5-point underdog. Are the fighting Sam Pittmans down there against Auburn? Iowa, markets actually readjusted here. Iowa, after their pretty lackluster performance against Troy, opened 3.5, now 2.5 against Minnesota. USC, -2 last week against Michigan, now 5.5. And then Baylor was a 2.5-point dog against Colorado, and now they're a 2-point dog at Colorado. So of those 8, Adam, anything jump out to you from a too much of an overreaction, not enough, from the look ahead to where the market now sits now?
I like Baylor. I have Baylor at 3.5 point favorite in my power ratings. Now, that said, I've had a problem rating Colorado the last 2 years under Dion. So maybe just a team that I don't really have a great handle on. But I think Colorado State is really, really bad, like extremely bad this season. I don't know how. It's good all the money they allegedly spent.
Good thing they talked all that shit in the offseason.
Yeah, right. So I like Baylor in that game. By the way, as we're finishing up here, San Jose State getting smoked in the market. They're down to 12 in that game against Washington State, and the total coming back down as well. So seems like opposing groups with different interests in that game, to be sure. Wow. Yeah, that was a move that kind of caught me off guard a little bit.
11.5 offshore. Holy shit.
Yeah, this one's moving real, really quickly.
Well, I guess I can't give that out as a best bet anymore.
the other one that's intriguing to me, Utah laying the road price against Oklahoma State. So Oklahoma State was getting throttled by Arkansas and then came back in the second half of that game. Utah's done nothing wrong. And if they get Cam Rising back, you know, that's probably a good thing. Although I thought Isaac Wilson played really well last week for the most part in that game. So, you know, that one's interesting to me because Oklahoma State's really done nothing wrong outside of one bad half against Arkansas. So to see the market kind of positioning itself against them, I thought was a little bit surprising. I have Oklahoma State a 1 point favorite for what it's worth.
Gotta love line moves live during podcasts. So all that thing I said about take the 14, you'll get a 14 with San Jose State. You might not. So we'll see as we hit the finish on this podcast. All right, for Adam Burke, you can follow him on Twitter at Skating Tripods. Thanks to Wyatt and Ryan, our producers. I will be back later this week with Matt Humans, probably not without a San Jose State as an official bet as the market has gone down today during this podcast. Make sure you read Adam's article over at vsin.com. All of the articles, JVT has a weekly article that comes out on Mondays as well. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Another week, folks, in that top 200 of sports podcasts. So thank you again for that. We'll be back later this week right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.